very much in favor of the counting of points.
Does it work for you? No.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Run Through, the figure skating podcast where we talk about all the things that make us kiss, make us cry, and make us go to the Olympic Games for the summertime.
Well, some of us.
Well, that's so rude to just kind of remind me.
Yeah, I meant you, though.
Yeah, Sully,
my real center of the games in Connecticut.
I was kind of the epicenter of, I was right where it all happens. Creating the magic of France, of truly France. Actually, before we kind of get into it.
Oh, yeah. Also, hi, everyone. He's Adam Rippon.
Yeah.
I'm Sarah Hughes, not Olympic champion in figure skating and not Olympian in beach volleyball.
Or Olympic champion in beach volleyball.
No.
I know.
She's not either.
You know that as soon as they, what's her partner's name? Kelly Chang?
Yeah.
As soon as Kelly and Sarah Hughes, the volleyball player, didn't make the gold medal match, I thought to myself, another Sarah Hughes, another not gold medalist.
Who's not an Olympic champion.
It's good for you because you still kind of, you have one-upped her, obviously.
Well, I'm starting a club of not Olympic champions named Sarah Hughes, and I'm happy to have a brand new member to that club.
Well, she was always a member. She just never left. That's true,
but she's kind of reconfirmed. She's recommitted her, what is that called when you,
her sentencing.
Reaffirm your vows.
Yeah. Yes, that's what,
like,
she did.
Renewing your vows.
Yeah.
In marriage.
You said renewing her vows. I went, her sentencing?
It is sort of like a life sentence for me.
Yeah, because,
I mean,
kind
you
of
never
like.
Know.
I think you know.
I think I know. Yeah. I think we do know. Yeah.
So I kind of want to start this off with Sarah was in Paris, the famous city in France, Paris, France, the city of Paris, France. But the one thing that I really loved and I felt truly connected to was that Sarah was working all of the gymnastics events, and they were in the Bercy Arena, which every figure skating fan will know is the arena where they have the French Grand Prix whenever it's in Paris. So I felt eerily connected to everyone inside that arena, especially you, Sarah.
Well, I remember the day that it dawned on you that my hotel was the Novotel Bercy, and
yes,
you were freaking out via text saying, I've spent some of the worst nights of my life there and some of the best.
Yes, I have. And that is true, because I stayed there the night Trump was elected into office in 2016. Yep.
But then you did your best program ever there later that week.
Sort of in defiance of of an incoming administration.
Yeah, right. And it worked. I think
it did work. And 4 years later, he was voted out of office because of that skate that I did perform at the Bercy Arena.
Yeah. And I do always give you credit for that. And I thought of that every time I walked into the arena during the Olympics. I was like, this is where it all happened.
This is the room where it happened. This is the room where it happened. Now, so because you were working, I want to talk a little bit about Olympics, because they're just, you know, they're top of mind.
I want to talk a lot a bit about Olympics.
Good.
I hope that everybody here, despite your number one sport probably being figure skating, was watching the Summer Olympics.
Yes.
Because it was actually very good.
They're back, Sarah. The Olympics are back.
I think they are. I mean, you're the one who first kind of told me that, because, you know, being in France, obviously, you're surrounded by it. It's hard to get a sense of what people at home are actually, like, thinking, talking about, etc. And my timeline, because I work in Olympic sports, is naturally going to have a bunch of Olympic content. So I'm never sure if it's, like, you know, skewed the wrong way or whatever. And all of the like NBC content is not available in France. So I couldn't really see stuff that we were posting or whatever else. So you're the one who had to tell me they were back. You were like, no, it's real. They're back.
Yeah. Because you know what? I'll be honest. As a huge Olympic fan and Olympian, I am comedian.
An Olympican.
I did feel this sort of waning attention on the Olympics happening through Tokyo and Beijing. I think the Olympics were always a big thing and a big deal, but I just felt like, are people still gonna, are they still watching? Like, it just felt like the intensity of Rio and even of Pyeongchang, like, I felt like there was an intensity there. Like, there was a lot of attention on it, and it felt like maybe there was, like, less. You know, obviously it was, the like, in COVID still, and no audience, no family, and I was excited for Paris, but didn't really know what to expect. But when the opening ceremonies were happening, I could just see, like, you should have been on Twitter when it was happening. It was just, it was beautiful.
I mean, I was on Twitter.
It was beautiful. You just weren't sure.
I wasn't sure if that was because my algorithm is already going to show me most of the Olympic content.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it really, truly was taking off with the general public.
This was general public.
It seems like it did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it did. Because my Twitter feed is mostly focused on, like, your pop culture, right?
Yeah, well, your pop crave.
Your poo crave.
Your poo crave.
And I didn't really know what to think or to say or to feel. Or how to act, even. But when I saw what was happening online, I was reinvigorated. And then, this has nothing to do with being employed by the NBC Universal Empire, but the Peacock app was incredible to use during the Olympics. It was amazing. And I know, Sarah, you were just saying that, like, a lot of this is geo-blocked when you're out of the country, mm-hmm. so you don't have the access to watch the Olympics the way that we do.
Yeah,
we being the lay people of America.
I did have, like, a little bit of, like, special, quote unquote, special Peacock access that I used here and there, but I was working so much that I couldn't like sit and kind of explore the app or enjoy it like a viewer would. I watched some of Gold Zone for maybe 1 hour one time. Mm-hmm. But I generally, like, didn't have a lot of downtime to be watching stuff, or like my downtime was times when there wasn't competition happening.
Yes.
So there was nothing live to watch. But yeah, this Peacock app thing is something I heard from a lot of people. So, like, kudos to them, to the Peacock team, because I mean, I feel like 60% of the battle of getting people to watch something is making it easy for them to watch it.
Totally. Totally.
And it seems like they achieved that. And the Gold Zone concept seemed to really take off. Like, people really liked that, which was cool for that team. And yeah, I'm, like, very excited that people watched it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know what else to say. Like, it's funny to be, like you said, we are, you're an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not. But I'm very, like, I'm in it all the time.
Yeah.
So
you're absolutely honorary.
It's like a weird feeling to be super, super in something, and then normal people around you in your life don't really know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been the case for a few years.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, even this summer, I mean, I wasn't sure how many people were going to watch Paris because 2 months ago, people were like, when are the next Olympics?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm leaving in 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, like, and then I think it was kind of the perfect storm of it caught on, you know, online or in the news or whatever. And people just started turning it on. And to your point, like Peacock made it easy, and so they just kept it on. And everybody, I think the time change was favorable too, because people could just like have it on live at work, and watch it during the day. But also, you know, if they didn't, we had all this content wrapping up the day for them in the primetime show. So
yeah,
I feel like that helped also. Like in Asia, you couldn't really watch anything live for the most part.
I think one of the things that I think was just so great was that, and this is what I felt like the disconnect of the Beijing games was, and also Tokyo, was that like you would see the highlights of things pop up online. So you'd already see what would happen, and then you'd get on like Instagram or TikTok and you'd see these behind the scenes things from the athletes. And it was just sort of like this competing but also compelling storytelling that was like kind of happening on the outskirts of the Olympics. And then like the main stuff, you know, you already knew the results. So there was less of like this urgency that I need to see it. And I honestly, I think like the time change was, it was favorable, but I almost feel like it was irrelevant. Like the energy behind what I was seeing, people would have been like, all right, I'm going to get up at 4 o'clock. I'm going to get up at 3 a.m. and just like do it. Like they were in it. And I think because they had access to, like, I think in the past it was like you could see some stuff on social media, like whatever. And then it was hard to navigate, like, okay, there will be some stuff on NBC, but then I have to go over to E, and then I have to go over to USA Network. And when it was just all on Peacock, and especially they had that multi-view, that was killer. My God. my God. That was incredible. And you just lightly tap on the one that you want, and that was the audio. It was pretty genius. And that's what we're going to announce. Today's podcast is sponsored by Peacock.
Peacock, not a sponsor. Could be.
They really could be, because we're really giving them.
Anyone from Peacock's listening, you could be a sponsor, a lucky sponsor.
You could be a lucky sponsor.
What was your favorite? Okay, two questions. Mm-hmm. Tell me your favorite thing to watch that you expected to be a favorite, and then tell me something that surprised you that you loved watching.
Something that one of my favorite things to watch was, I would say, the gymnastics, because you know, I know a lot of the people that work on the gymnastics show. Like, I know you, and I know a lot of the producers who were in Connecticut, because they also do figure skating. And when the event was live, I would, like, wake up really early, and I would go into the office in Connecticut, and I would watch it live in the trailer where they were producing the show. So what I loved was, like, you know, I couldn't hear Sarah, but I knew Sarah was, like, on the mic with everybody who was in the room with me. So I really felt like I was, like, at the event.
It would have really been a disaster if they had given you a headset, though.
Absolutely. Because
if we could hear each other, that would have made the shows worse.
Absolutely. Simone Biles would have pulled out again. She wouldn't. Now, before I continue with what was my most surprising favorite moment, what went through your head when she started twirling her ankle in the air in the qualifying?
I had a trauma response to that. I actually started drafting an email that would go to, you know, people who needed to know if she were to withdraw.
Oh, my God.
I started just writing it because I was like, well, she's not going to surprise me again.
No.
I'm going to have my finger on the trigger.
Right. And that being the trigger. Enter key.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was, you know, scary. It was concerning. Like, yes. It was just like, oh no, like, you know, partially it's, you know, obviously the secondary concern is what I'm talking about, which is like how we deal with it. But like the primary concern was like, there is no way she came this far to only come
totally
this far.
Yes,
like there
obviously.
Is no way this is happening to her.
Yes.
And so I'm, you know, obviously glad that she pushed through. I actually felt very emotional when the team won gold and then she won her own gold. Like, I felt like there was some measure of closure to that, you know, whether she is done or not. Like, it was just like, okay, the Tokyo chapter can be closed for her and for all of them, but like for her especially. I kind of sobbed through the medal ceremony for the women's team event.
Of course. Of course.
And I kept like feeling emotional throughout the evening. Like it was, because, you know, I would never compare my experience to an athlete's, but you know, when you're embedded in these sports, you do kind of like live and die with them and what is happening to them and their emotional experiences and their, you know, heartbreaks and triumphs. And it's, you know, I felt this kind of immense relief in the end for them.
I mean, it was just this like buildup of like, please just do it for yourself. I never want to have to hear you answer another question on
about the twisties.
Yes.
Yeah.
I never, ever, ever want you to have to answer that question. I never want you to say that word again. It's a dirty word.
Yeah, I want. Yeah, she should be able to put it behind her.
Yes.
And like now she gets to do that. And so I think to go back to your original question, I think it was just I was panicking on her behalf, like thinking, oh no, this, you know, this isn't happening. And then it wasn't happening and she pushed through and was fine.
Yes.
And she seemed to be kind of joking about it. I don't know if you saw her like do the crawling thing when they were warming up on vault later that night.
Yeah, we saw. So like, because I was in the production truck, I saw literally everything. I saw people blowing their nose on the sidelines. So like when you're in the production truck, there's maybe, I don't know, 20 different monitors with 20 different camera angles. So you truly, when you're in the production truck, have a better view of the competition than you would even if you were in the arena.
Well, and I was. Like, you saw probably more details than I did. I'm in the arena, and I have two monitors in front of me, but not all the angles that you can look at from the truck. I only have the angles that were actually airing.
Oh, I had every angle.
So, yeah. So you had kind of the inside scoop.
I did. And not only that, there's audio on all of them. So I could hear every intimate thought from every intimate person. So it was exhilarating. It really was.
Both of the gymnastics team events.
Oh, were. The men's team event, that did make me cry. Steven Notarczyk, that hit when he just hit that routine, it was like I don't know how to explain it. My passport renewed, my citizenship was reinstated, my skin cleared up. It was just like, that was such an unbelievable moment. And it was just, it culminated with like all of the men being really good all night.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just like sitting at the edge of my seat, hoping that like Brody Malone would have a better showing in the final than he did in the qualifying. And he just kind of pulled through the whole event. And then it just ended so blissfully with the taking off of the glasses. And the putting down of the dismount.
Yeah. And the lifting up of the
nation.
Nerd from Massachusetts.
Yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. The men are so nice. Like, they're such nice guys. They're so likable. They're so they're such good teammates to each other. And like, they're just so easy to root for. And, you know, obviously the women are easy to root for too, but it's different. Like, they are gold medal favorites when they go, and the men are, you know, trying to win bronze. Like, it feels different, you know?
Yes.
And that was so good. And you couldn't have scripted it better, that the way the draw went, and the way qualifying went, that Steven would have to go last on the last event, in the final.
No, You couldn't have scripted it better. We tried to. They actually asked you and me to try to script it. And we said, we can't do it better than this. This is what you already have. Right. No notes.
So I just said, put a countdown clock on him and let's go. Which we did do. Which we did
do. It was amazing. Wait, I'm going to go back to talking about the coverage of... I think in the past, I feel like NBC was trying to gatekeep all of the footage so that you'd have to watch it on primetime.
Mm-hmm.
And with this games, even though I was watching everything live every night, I had to watch it again on primetime because then I got to see it. Like, it just felt like the compact, perfect version of everything. So I could basically see it as a highlight, but then I got the perspective of the other commentators and I got to see all of like the packages and all of like the athlete profiles. So I ended up watching everything twice just because it was accessible. Again, this episode is sponsored by Peacock.
Yeah, and like you said, like there were elements that were kept, you know, for prime time, or
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say kept for, but there were additional elements that were added in prime time that you didn't see live that, you know, kept it a little bit fresh, even if the competition part you already saw.
Yes.
I think it's like for every, I hate the words changing media landscape, hate. But
go on. But
it is a changing media landscape. And I think that, you know, with live sports, there is a lot of like guess and check going on with every company of like, what is the best way to get people to tune in? Do you make everything available live? Do you hold certain things for not live? Do you like, you know, and how many, you know, people do you want to drive towards streaming versus toward linear TV? Like, you know, it's like, and I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to that yet. It's just sort of, it evolves with time and with, I think there were great successes for the Olympics, like in general, like mm-hmm. not just in the US. I think like they were well viewed throughout the world. But that doesn't mean it can't improve. And it doesn't mean, you know, the equation changes every time the games change. Like winter is harder to mm-hmm. get people into, just is. There
Not
are
us.
Certain host cities that appeal less to the American public, like, you mm-hmm. know, Paris is one of those places that is completely romanticized by American society,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, the host city itself was a draw for people to watch, I think. And I think Milan will be that way too, but a little bit to a lesser extent. It's not Rome, right? And
wow, don't
you know
that
and
to
then
the
you
people
move on
of Milan
to,
my god.
Yeah.
This is nice, but it's not Rome.
Well, you know what I mean. It's
no, I
like
know what you mean.
The Paris, like, scenery is so familiar to everybody that it's, like, cool to watch them host this big event.
It's so crazy for you to take one of the most beautiful European cities and pit it against another European city and go, well, it ain't Rome.
I mean... I just mean in the zeitgeist
of Italian
cities.
No, you're correct.
You know, like the first one that people go to visit
is Rome.
From America.
Yes.
Is Rome.
Yeah, because
and from I would say
Milan
probably any other country. Yeah.
Ain't no diva. She ain't no diva.
She is a diva. People just are gonna have to learn that.
Right.
You know?
I do know.
So it's like a change, like the calculus will change every time, and then it'll be totally different when it's in LA, mm-hmm. and like most of it will be live, truly live, in prime time, and then because of the time change won't affect things being live, and then you go to like you go back to France in 2030. The French Alps are hosting the 2030 Winter Games, and then in 2032. The Summer Games are in Australia, mm-hmm. so I have no idea what to think of how that time change will be. You know, that'll be a little more like being in Asia. But Australia is a place that I think Americans feel a little more connected to because mm-hmm. it's an English-speaking country, so maybe that has an effect. Like, who knows?
Well, to pull a quote from you, it is a changing media landscape. So by the time we get to Australia, we won't even have computers anymore.
God willing.
And he is quite willing, too willing, actually.
Yeah, he's too willing to let me have a computer all the time.
Yes.
And always be working. He's a little too willing there.
Okay, so my most surprising... So I've two answers for you on this. I've always loved watching the track and field, but because I had done a lot of prep research-wise before, in addition to watching the documentary on Netflix called Sprint, which you recommended.
I love Sprint.
I was just as invested in the track and field as I was with the gymnastics. And I feel like I know the gymnastics pretty well, especially through you. Like, I am a fan of watching gymnastics, but because of you, I feel like I have a much better understanding. I have no idea what I'm watching at all. I should really take some time to, like, learn what the elements are, but I don't.
It's harder than it is in skating. Significantly harder.
That's so surprising to me, because in skating, in theory, everything just without the takeoff looks exactly the same. But I guess
the takeoff is easier to spot. Yeah, but there isn't as much variety.
Yeah.
There isn't as much variety. Like, there are just fewer elements to learn, period. That's the biggest thing. And the other thing is that they have at least something in the name that indicates, like, a little bit to you. Like, there's always a double, triple, quad in there. Mm-hmm. Even if there is a last name associated with it, where, like, in gymnastics, the whole move is just named after the first person who did it successfully. So it's just like, oh, like, there's the Kovacs.
Right.
And you're like,
What? I don't think I got that shot.
Like, there's nothing descriptive about it, because it's just, or like the Biles, right? It's like she has multiple skills named after her. Now, there she goes doing the Biles too. Like, that just doesn't tell you anything about what it is. Like, I can tell you it's a triple twisting double back, and then you're like, okay, I can kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah. You're like, Biles too, where?
But once people start using the names, it's a lot harder, I think. And that is one of the things that I find the most challenging, is just the names are not super descriptive. And also, they're doing it on, you know, 8 different apparatus. Like, the men have 6, the women have 4, they share 2 of them. And so, like, you're learning, you know, I know that dance, really, like, dance is the only equivalent where I'm like, oh, they're doing completely different elements in dance.
Yes.
But pairs is doing some version, for the most part, of singles elements. And both singles disciplines are doing the same elements.
Right.
So it's just not as, there's more crossover. It's easier to learn. It's just easier to learn, in my opinion.
Understood. No, I now I completely see it from your perspective. Fine. It's good that I've kind of opened my mind to seeing something from your point of view.
Yeah, finally.
Once. Yeah.
I'm just saying, don't beat yourself up about, oh, I need to, like, take time to learn the elements. Like, if you're inclined to do that, I encourage you. But I don't think you need to, like, feel like, oh, I'm uneducated because I can't name everything.
That's not why I feel uneducated.
Okay.
It's a,
well,
it's
is
in
it
the
because the research manual wasn't good enough for you?
Yeah, and I kind of took that up with my team in Stamford, Connecticut, which was about 25,000 miles away. Now, being said, I fell in love with the track. I was completely obsessed with it. Gabby freaking Thomas walking away as the star of the track and field. That was,
love Gabby Thomas.
Yeah. I felt like she was so underrated. Like,
well, I think she was in Sha'Carri Richardson's shadow in the sprint events.
Yes.
Because Sha'Carri was, you know, had potential to win the 100 and then tried to run the double. She didn't make the team in the 200. But I think for a while, because Sha'Carri had so much buzz around the 100, then her trying to do the 200, she started to overshadow even the normal 200 meter runners.
Right.
And then she didn't make the team. So you end up with, oh, okay, this is the 200 meter team.
Right.
And it's almost like deflated in some way because Sha'Carri's not part of it. And then Gabby Thomas is a fucking superstar. Like, yes. She's amazing.
Yeah. And Sha'Carri's just a huge personality,
gorgeous
too.
Oh, and so smart. Like, a Harvard, like, medical degree of some kind. I don't think it's, like, med school, but she has, like, a public health degree of some kind, I believe, from Harvard. And... yeah, and like a nice, normal person as far as I can tell. Like, she was in Sprint and had these like cute scenes where she was at an outdoor barbecue with her friends and like going to watch her boyfriend play Frisbee or something, or some pickup sport in Austin. Like, it was a very Austin scenes. But yeah, I love Gabby Thomas. I'm so happy for her.
What are your thoughts on Noah Lyles competing with COVID?
Okay, this is a good topic. So for those who don't know, Noah Lyles won the 100 meter by a few thousandths of a second in a crazy photo finish.
The photo finish is something I think about when I was at the, like, when we were working the games, I thought about every day, every hour on the hour. Couldn't stop thinking about that photo. It's crazy. I'm certain most of our listeners have probably seen it, but if not, you need to, like, find it. It is absolutely...
it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Yes. So that was, like, a huge, amazing moment. But Noah is really a 200-meter runner originally. Like, that's his bread and butter. He is, like, he's the American record holder in that, and, like, has said he wants to break Usain Bolt's world record in the 200. So the 100 was the one that it was like, oh, well, can he pull it off? Can he pull off the double? But it was like, he's the favorite in the 200 easily. And so he runs the 100. He wins it in that photo finish. And then later in the week is running the 200 and gets third. And then it's revealed after the race, or I don't know if people found out a little before the race, that he had COVID, that he had gotten COVID. And ran through with COVID and was like having trouble breathing. I know he has asthma. So he has asthma as it is. He then has COVID. He runs the 200 meters. He gets third, which again, he was the clear favorite to win going into the Olympics. And then it became this big discussion of like, should he have run the 200 meters with COVID? You know, did the other athletes know? Like, who, you know, what is the sort of moral? I don't know. I think, I mean, you're the athlete here, but I think any athlete would have done what he did.
Yeah.
I just think you don't come. It's like I said about Simone, you don't come this far to only come this far. And like, there is, I understand what people are saying about COVID being contagious. And we could have a conversation about whether or not he should have told other people. But I think him running with it does not bother me at all. That does not bother me at all, because what, you get to do this every 4 years and you don't know how many times you get to do it. And I just can't imagine spending my whole life dedicated to something and then letting something that feels like the flu, to me at least, like, obviously if he was very, very sick, he wouldn't have been able to.
Right.
He ran, let me just reiterate, he was not so sick that he didn't win an Olympic medal.
Right.
He won an Olympic medal. That's like, so he's probably dealing with what feels like a cold or a slight flu. I just can't imagine an athlete that would be like, no, I'm not going to run.
Yeah. I understand.
By choice.
Yes.
Obviously in Tokyo and Beijing, people didn't have choices. Like, Vincent Joe was just, he was not allowed to skate. But
and
had he been allowed to make that choice, I would have thought that he probably would have decided to skate.
Yeah, I agree. I also feel... I understand the conversation around it of like, was it like irresponsible? But I, in the way he approached it, anytime he was like in like indoors, he was always in a mask, and then mask was off when he was like outside in the arena. So if he was trying to like do it in the most respectable and responsible way possible. I feel like he did that. But again, it's just like, it's something that happens every 4 years. And if you're... the way he was feeling was probably like, I don't feel well, most likely. I don't know if this is a good comparison, but to like the way Simone Biles probably felt when she like twisted her ankle and was like, this doesn't feel good. But because a twisted ankle isn't like something that is contagious, right? You know, it's a different conversation. But right. You know, it's an interesting conversation to have. But I think that like it's really easy for some, you know, yeah, keyboard warrior to be like, that's, I wouldn't have done it. I'd pull out. I don't think you would have.
I think to reach this level in sports, you have to be, and you can verify this. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it before. You have to be an inherently selfish person mm-hmm. to do that. Not that you have to be like a selfish person as like a character thing, but what I'm saying is like, you have to be selfish in order to, you have to make self-centered decisions throughout your life to make it to this level. It's you have to not go to social things, not show up to certain things that your friends want you to be at or your family wants you to be at. You have to go do things on your own. And the number one, you know, thing in your life is you and your body. Mm-hmm. That's how you make it this far. And so like, I can't imagine that there's another athlete on that track that night who would have made a different decision for themselves.
I can almost guarantee you, I'd put money on it, that if the other athletes, maybe they knew, maybe they didn't know, but if they were asked, like, do you feel comfortable having Noah in this race and he has COVID, I could almost put money on every single one of them being like, good, it'll be easier to beat him. Like, put him in there.
Especially the way sprinters are,
100%. I think, I mean, it's so easy to be like, I hope he has extra COVID. Put him in.
And I think the thing about it too is like, think about people who are wrestling or playing rugby, mm-hmm. like doing real contact sports, and people who are not taking COVID tests or who are not symptomatic. Like, you could be in contact with someone who's sick at any time, mm-hmm. And I just, again, I think there is a valid point to be made. Like, should he have just said to everyone, hey, I tested positive for COVID. My intention is still to run this race. And let people, you know, just like know it and be aware of it. And then he's isolated or whatever he is, fine. Mm-hmm. But the decision to run the race doesn't really bother me at all. Like, that's your chance.
Now, in the games, Sarah, I'm asking, and I can't remember, like, wasn't there an Australian athlete or athletes who tested positive for COVID and they were pulled out of the event?
I have no idea.
This is because you didn't have Peacock in France. So you'll never know.
I will say, covering like one specific sport for the whole first half of the games, like, I did feel a little tunnel vision. Like, I did not know what was going on in other sports for a while. So,
well, the other sport, this is the second part to my question about 45 minutes later, was women's rugby.
You did. You loved the rugby.
Well, I think like kind of everyone had fallen in love with Alona Marr, and mm-hmm. it was just truly because of the peacock of it all. It was just there. Oh, there's the rugby. Like, it was so in the back of my mind of like, watch rugby. Like, it was something like, don't forget, but like, it wasn't top of mind to be like, oh, like, this is when we're sitting down. But because the coverage was like, this is on, it was like so easy to just like get in and watch it. And then for them to medal, I mean, that was like the men's gymnastics team for me. Like, I was crying at women's rugby.
I'll tell you what I was crying at.
Tell me.
the figure skating medal ceremony.
Oh my God. What a beautiful kind of bow on the package of our Olympics talk. Yeah, that took me.
I sobbed throughout.
Well, you were at the ceremony.
I went to the ceremony. I like put it on my, it happened to be on a day that there was not gymnastics, which was ideal. And I had it on my calendar and I went with my friend, who doesn't follow figure skating as closely and was just watching me cry, basically. But Andrea Joyce also was there and was crying a little bit too. It was just like really lovely. They did it at, actually, I want to talk about this. One of the coolest things that the Paris Games did was they had this thing called Champions Park, and it was on the Trocadero, basically the like plaza that's in front of the Eiffel Tower, essentially. And it was set up. Do you remember where the speeches happened at the opening ceremony? Like at the end when they all got off the boats and they were like, all the athletes were standing around this, basically looks like a concert runway stage.
Yes.
So that was called Champions Park, and it was open to the public. They had bleachers set up on either side of the stage that could fit like 13,000 people. And it was free, and people could go anytime they wanted. And they had the live events up on big screens that people could all watch together. They also did like some live music there sometimes, and they would have the medalists from the day before come to Champions Park and like take pictures and sign autographs and just like have an extra moment. I thought that was brilliant, and it was beautiful, obviously, at the foot of the Eiffel Tower. Like, That was a great idea, just to make the games like more accessible to people who weren't like buying tickets. Anyway, that is where they did the figure skating medal ceremony. And it was a beautiful day. It was a really like fun crowd, you know. It wasn't like completely full. I think people didn't realize really what was happening. But it was really nice. They played the anthem for them, and you know, obviously the Japanese team was there too to get their medals. And yeah, it was really, really just a really nice moment. My only, you know, complaint is that Canada wasn't also there, because they deserve to have bronze medals and they didn't get them. So,
yeah, aside from the Canadians not ending up with bronze, which I also disagree with, please put that on the record.
it's on it.
Thank you. But yeah, I was excited to watch the ceremony because I thought like, oh, this will be so nice. But I was really taken back with how I was so like oddly emotional about it. And it was just, again, it was like this closure from something that happened like 2 years ago. And it was just like, oh my God, this ended up being even better than winning gold in Beijing, because they're getting to have the real true Olympic moment of like celebrating this in front of this incredible crowd, and their families were there. And it was like, this was such a blessing in disguise that like you will have this victorious moment. Just wait. And the timing will be serendipitous to be something even better. And it was like,
and Team USA House had this big celebration for them that night. Like, you know, they presented them in front of the crowd at Team USA House. And then there was, like a private room where they had like their own little party with their families. It was just like, yeah, it was really nice. Like all that stuff. I'm not saying that it was good to have to wait 2.5 years. I wouldn't go that far, but they couldn't have done any of that in Beijing.
No, I would go that far.
Couldn't have had any of that.
And be like, you got a free trip to Paris out of it. You wouldn't wait 2 years to go to Paris. I would.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a really, really emotional moment for me too. Just like you said, it was very much like the Simone Biles thing of like,
yeah,
this is a closed chapter. Like it was relief, I think, that was mostly causing the emotions. Yeah, that was great.
Again, I truly, if you asked me if they were going to get their medals, I absolutely, in full confidence, broad-chestedly would have said no.
I believed in it.
I didn't. I didn't at all, actually. And I was like, you know what is going to happen? It's just like one day, 10 years from now, they're going to go, okay, we finally figured it out. Sorry for the wait. Team USA, gold medalists. Or I was like, they're going to just cancel out the gold medal and be like, there's a silver and a bronze. Nobody's moving up. And we'll ship you the medal. Look out for, this is your tracking number. That's kind of exactly what I thought would happen, that it would just be so far out in the distance. I had absolute no faith that this would be settled in. I mean, when we were living it, 2 years was a long time. Now that it's over, it's like, well, they've got it done in 2 years. it was shocking to me in that moment. I feel like that's why I was just so taken back of like, oh my God, it's actually happening. And it's always a good day when you see Wakaba Higuchi smiling ear to ear. You know, that was another thing.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say my only complaint was that Canada didn't get bronze, because my other only complaint was that Shoma Uno could not be there. And I wish that he had been there. But congratulations to Olympic gold medalists and silver medalists, USA and Japan.
Yes. So, Sarah, seeing this podium of the team event got me thinking about, like, what do you have any predictions? Let's make some, like, bold predictions of, like, what do you think the team event is going to look like in Milan? Because as it stands, I believe that the Japanese are in my mind the favorite for gold.
Yeah,
it's close.
So the dance will be a real weak spot for Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And pairs will be a real weak spot for the US. And Canada actually should have decent contenders in both of those, but not in singles. So that kind of, they're missing two disciplines. The US and Japan, I do think Japan probably wins it out, because if you have, you know, the U.S. doesn't have a really strong pair contender.
Mm-hmm.
Japan doesn't have a strong dance contender. Both teams have very strong men.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan has stronger women.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably give the edge to Japan, right? I mean, that's
and
what you're
this
saying?
Moment, yeah, because I think, like, I think to, if you're really going to make a push at the gold, I think that you've got to put Kaori in for both short and long, just to guarantee that she's all, like, you always have a Japanese girl in first, so mm-hmm. that you're guaranteeing your women's points. Because, you know, let's say Japan is stronger in women. That being said, Isabeau is just second at Worlds. So it's not improbable to think
but
that she
also
could
was just third at Cranberry Cup.
Well, Cranberry Cup is not in the I'm not factoring in the Cranberry Cup at this moment. We will get there. Believe me, we will get there. We do.
I do think, like, yeah. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
So I'm thinking, like, you need to put, Kaori needs to skate both events. When we get to the men, I mean, it's almost like Japan should pull a Canada from Pyeongchang, where they didn't switch out anybody and they had, like, their strongest teams do both events.
I mean, now that Shoma is not going to keep going, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, you just have Yuma do both.
Yeah, and it's not like they have a second pair team.
They might be able to split the women. I think, like, it'll depend on how the next two seasons go, but, like, yeah. If Hana Yoshida or Mone Chiba, like, really finds consistency,
yes.
Or, like, if Wakaba kind of resurges and, like, if there's another really consistent woman, I could see them splitting the women up.
And I think it just depends on, like, what are the Americans doing? Like, if mm-hmm. Amber Glenn is having, like, this crazy season where
or
she's
Alyssa
just...
Or Alyssa Liu.
Or really any of them. But, like, if they... Or Ava Ziegler.
Or Sarah Everhart, 2024 Cranberry Cup champion.
Yes, that's true. I mean, it depends on the landscape of the Americans, yeah. Of, like, what your strategy is, yeah. When it comes to the women and the men.
You know, what I hate to say about the men is that it probably would be in their best interest to have Ilya do both programs, which would be sad for Jason, because obviously I would want Jason to be part of a team metal, mm-hmm. but strategically it would make more sense to just have Ilya try to win both programs.
Yeah, it would, depending on, but you never know the strategy of the Japanese, right? Because as it stands, it almost feels like you put your strongest man in for the short, as a way for, because usually you're this from the, you know, the main countries of like, you know, Canada, Japan, and America, they would use that as sort of like a warm up for them in the individual event and something not to like tire them out.
Yeah, it depends on the schedule of the individual events too. Like if, was it in Pyeongchang that the men's was right after? And that was one of the reasons that, that Nathan did not do both programs. That was part of the reason.
We had a week.
Am I remembering that right?
No, we had like a week between.
Okay. That must have been Beijing then. The men might have gone right away.
I think that is true.
Because the pairs went last in Beijing. And actually, right. I think the pairs might have gone first in Pyeongchang.
They did.
So I'm just switching them in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I remember that being a conversation of like, you know, do you have Nathan try to do two team event programs right before the men's event? And mm-hmm. the answer was ultimately no. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know this. I don't know the order of events in Milan off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that will be a factor.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
It's fun to talk strategy.
Yeah, it is. I went to the gold medal soccer game for the women that the U.S. team won in Paris. And then after the game, we walked in the neighborhood to somewhere to just like grab a drink and sit down. And our friend Michelle was with me, and she said, I have to show you something. And it was the Cranberry Cup results. And let me tell you, nothing makes me feel like figure skating is back like those singles results, which are so chaotic and confusing, especially, you know, I didn't watch it. And I was like, what is going on with
this? Is like
the
girlies. My mentality is just like, nobody should have results be public in August. That's so
early August.
Like, yes,
early.
No, because there are some seasons where, like, in early August, I was like finishing up the last 45 seconds with a choreographer of a free skate.
Right,
I wasn't going to Boston to compete at the Cranberry Cup.
I will say I really appreciate the continued bit that mm-hmm. Isabel Levito is doing by not getting credit for her final spin.
Yes, and what Sarah's
that
referring to...
That is important to me, and I actually really respect her for it.
I respect her for it. What Sarah's referring to is that in the Cranberry Cup women's free skate, Isabel Levito receives absolutely 0 points for the final spin. Thus becoming the third time she's
at least
on the international stage. Obviously the Cranberry Cup is
international event.
We are leaving out the Cranberry Cup international cup. It is sort of how like my home airport
I mean
is
it's
called
in the Challenger series.
I mean
now,
it is. Yeah, so. It's sort of like how my home airport is called the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre International Airport.
Does it go to Canada?
Used to, not even anymore. It's sort of like they reminisce.
It was once international.
Yeah, I think they took one flight to Mexico, not even Canada, which would have been closer.
You know what? Cranberry Cup is international because, and by the way, Ashley is not here because she had a wedding this week. I shouldn't say she had a wedding this week.
Her own wedding, by the way.
She had her own, sorry. She hosted a wedding that she was in.
Yes. Yes.
And, but she was well represented at the Cranberry Cup International by Eliška Brezhnova.
Yes.
From Czechia.
Absolutely. Make it.
Who
just...
got 10th at the Cranberry Cup International.
Which, that is the top 10.
So she is here with us. Mm-hmm. Ashley is.
She's always here with us. But, well, as we look at the results, we go, she's really here with us. Now, something I want to talk about also from the Cranberry Cup is Jimmy Ma pulls away with that bronze medal. Okay?
Yeah, second in the free skate.
Then takes to Instagram. Did you see his Instagram post?
No.
Okay. He has a picture of him with the medal with the caption, may I read it for you and
please,
the listener. I guess getting the shit beat out of me has its benefits. Dot, dot, dot. And the pictures are Sarah's mouth was agape and ajar. Now, the pictures are him, like, with the medal with the American flag around his shoulders, a classic victorious position. In the Kiss and Cry, he's standing thanking the people of Boston. In the Kiss and Cry, and then the last two, the third slide in this four slide carousel is him working with a boxing coach, and so he's referring to being getting the shit kicked out of him
Got it.
In a Boston parking lot.
Okay, I was waiting for what this was about. Okay, getting note to self. If I want a Cranberry Cup International
see that.
Medal, I don't want to see
that. I don't want to see that.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, good for Jimmy Ma. I'm happy for him.
Me too.
Did you see that there was a guy in this event whose name was is very close to being Tate McRae, but it's
yes.
not?
I've worked with Tao McRae.
Tao McRae?
Yeah.
It was when I first read over the results, I was like, Tate McRae?
I did too. At one time, he trains in Irvine. And went down to Irvine. This was like to work. LOL. I rolled my eyes. I did go down there to work once a year. And I had a schedule of like all these kids I was working with. And I was like, Tate McRae is taking a lesson. I'm like, isn't she on tour? No,
yeah,
it was Tao McRae.
Not anymore.
No relation.
So yes, yeah, I did see so that. It's exciting that Challenger Series is starting. Was it
oh my god,
is
wait.
It Lombardia that has Ilya and Yuma going? Did I read that correctly?
Oh, if you read it at all, that's more work than I did into this.
I'm pretty sure they're both going to Lombardia Trophy.
Wait, Sarah, did you see that Tomoki was second in the short program and then 11th and finished, it did end up finishing last at Cranberry?
I did see that, and I think I saw it because somebody tweeted a really close-up of the 2 and the 11
yeah.
and said men's skating is back.
That is so men's skating coded.
Yeah. That's like OG men's skating. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, nothing for me will beat the Adam Sjohimfa from Worlds. The 17-2. 17-2-3.
17-2-3.
Yeah.
The legend. The man, the myth, the legend
that's
of Montreal.
You could use that as a four-digit pin. That's it ends up a four-digit pin ends up on the medal podium at Worlds. That's insane.
Yeah, this is, by the way, this is Adam's four-digit pin if anybody needs to borrow money.
Yeah, if you do end 17-2-3, that'll get you right into my checking account. If you do find that debit card just laying around, go for it. Now I'm looking at these results and it's making me excited for this season because I think that we're going to see some, I think the women in America is going to be really, really freaking interesting.
Hell yeah, it is. It's going to be so fun. We're in pre-Olympic season.
This is
pre-Olympic season. Like Worlds is in Boston. That's where people are going to get their Olympic spots. Like the countries are going to get their Olympic spots. Mm-hmm. Like we're in it now. Like we're almost, Milan is a year and a half away. Less than.
That's crazy.
In a year and a half, Milan will be over. A year and a half from the day we're recording right now.
Should I have just kept my suitcase packed?
Yeah. Because you're going to be in Milan, Connecticut before you know it.
If I'm in Milan, Connecticut, if they send me to Connecticut to work the Milan Games, my own flesh and blood will be there. That will be, can I say something? I want it to be on the record that sometimes when you go and work these like events, it's like you're there traveling to these places with friends. It almost feels like you have to go and like out and see some of the city. And so like you do leave exhausted because not only are you trying to fit in a little bit of like, I want to get the experience, but you're also working the full time.
Yeah.
Being in Connecticut was like being at a training camp for me, and I loved it because everything was at the office.
I remember you telling me that you left in great shape.
Oh, mentally
and physically. Was not my experience leaving Paris.
No. So the NBC offices in Stamford is this huge building, and on the bottom floor is a big Chelsea Piers, which is just, it's a huge sports fitness club. So there's a huge gym, tennis courts. There's a huge like Olympic like sized swimming pool. Like Mallory Wegeman, a Paralympian, was hosting a show during the Olympics and was also training for Paralympics at the same time. So she was like going just downstairs to Chelsea Piers to swim in the pool and train. And there's an ice rink there, like everything. So I would literally go, I'd watch the gymnastics. I'd go over to Chelsea Piers. I'd work out for 2 hours. I'd get right back up to the NBC office. I'd go to the cafeteria. I'd have 2 chicken breasts and a bunch of vegetables. Then I'd go. I'd work for a little bit. I'd go back to the gym sometimes. And then I'd go right back to my hotel, watch all the Olympic stuff all over again on primetime. I was whipped. I was chained. And like Jimmy Ma said, I guess getting the shit beat out of me does have its benefits because I beat the shit out of me. And it had its benefits. I left Connecticut.
Stamford, Connecticut has definitely beat the shit out of me before. So I get it.
Oh, and it will again.
I get it. I am excited for this season. Milan is close. It's close. It's happening.
It's very close.
It's very close.
The crazy thing about skating is that when I feel like beginning of season, I'm like January is the beginning of year, so January must be beginning of season, but like the skating year starts so far into the year already that like, oh my god, yeah, we're almost 1 year out. We are less than a year and a half away.
Yeah, opening ceremony in Milan is February 6th, 2026.
In the arms of... I mean, I can't wait. I'm scared.
No, it does make me feel a little panicked that it's, like, so close. But I'm excited, too. Like, it's... Right. I think that's part of the... Like, the great thing about the Olympics are back and people were so excited about Paris is I'm just, like... I really hope that the momentum can be carried through to the winter because I think winter sports are... even more crazy to watch for the average person, and I want people to get into them, you know, so hopefully Paris has kicked off a new generation of Olympic fans.
I'll tell you one thing that I was seeing on social media that just like made me feel so good was, you know how like I don't know. You just see these profiles of these like Olympic fans who have been fans of the Olympics forever. And they're like, the first one I ever watched was like 84 Los Angeles. And I've just been going to everyone ever since. Yeah. And I've always thought like, will we ever see that kind of fan again? Mm-hmm. And on TikTok, there were so many times where I saw like young kids filming themselves watching the Olympics and filming themselves sobbing, crying, then turning the camera around, and then their older or younger sister is also there sobbing, crying. And I was like, this is it. Like we're watching these new Olympic fans, like we're watching them. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful. It was so good to see. I think like also like watching Paris reminded me why I wanted to be an Olympian too, like because it had that energy to it, like it was inspiring. It was like, oh, I want to do that. That's why I think Paris was such a hit, because I think
and in terms of people actually going to the games, like it is it's great for the American audience, especially that there are two upcoming games in the United States in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a summer and a winter. So, like, there's a variety of opportunity to go to these places and see the games, even if, like, if Europe or, you know, Australia is too far away for you to travel. Mm-hmm. Like, that will make it so much more accessible to people who are here. So that's really exciting. And hopefully not only inspires a new generation of fans, but a new, like you said, a new generation of athletes.
Yeah.
To watch people win at home, especially.
I mean, there the things that I loved, and I feel like I haven't really, I feel like for Tokyo and for Beijing, the big talk was like the athletes, they just made it through. And they're just so grateful to be there, and which I think was true. Mm-hmm. But with this one, it was like Rebecca Andrade. It was like they were talking about her home club. Like they got this influx of thousands of calls of like people wanting to sign up for gymnastics, or Steven Odorozic's home gymnastics club. All these parents calling about their sons getting involved in gymnastics. And it was like, yeah, that's what the Olympics does. Like it makes you see the greatest parts of it. Yeah. And that's what was like so amazing. And it was like, there's going to be a million little girls who see themselves in Simone, who see themselves in Suni, and they're going to go, I want to be, I know, that's
that
my
was
girl.
Like maybe my favorite moment of my Olympics was her winning bronze in the all around. That was amazing. Ooh, yeah. Love her.
I know. I love that girl. I love her. Wow.
Yeah, so in conclusion, we love the Olympics, actually. And yeah, I just feel like kind of high on it. Even this many days back, like it's been a couple weeks, but amazing.
Oh, I'm still feeling it. Still feeling the ripple effect of Connecticut.
As they say. I'm always feeling that.
Oh, yes, you are. So Sarah, I think our plan is like in the next few weeks, skating season is among us. It's time for the run through to get running through.
Yeah, it is time. It is time. This is a cry for help to you, the listeners, because we, as you can hear, have not been able to be, you know, as focused and embedded in skating this summer as normally we would be able to. So send us the things that happened over the summer or are happening now that you want us to talk about, because we are behind. We are behind.
We're catching up. We're ready.
Yeah, we're ready. And we're also, I mean, I do need to say that we are, college football season is starting, and Adam and I will be, you know, cheering on your number one Georgia Bulldogs. So there's just a lot for us to keep up with.
So, you know, don't be afraid. You know, do we post on that Instagram every day? We don't. Do we post on it every month? We don't.
We don't. No.
Do we barely post on it ever? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that's
But
true.
Will we check the DMs in the coming weeks? We will.
We will.
We
and
will.
So, you know what, Sarah? This is what I this is a request and a plea I have to the audience. Sarah did just remind us that the Winter Games are less than a year and a half away, right? So, to our dedicated and incredible fans, I'm tearing up.
Go on.
To them, I want to say, if you want to have an incredible Olympic experience and you want to get your non-skating friends involved in skating, you should send us the topics that you think are a really good hook, line, and sinker for your non-skating friends to kind of get involved and feel invested. And we'll make some certain dedicated episodes for non-skating fans that you can send to your friends who are like, no, I want to watch the skating. I just don't know what I'm watching. I think we want to make some dedicated episodes for those non-skating
people. We'll do some 101s. We'll do some 101s for people.
Yeah. And I think we're going to make it so that as people get ready and excited for the Milan Games, that this can be something that you can recommend to your non-skating friends, and we can really just make this huge. We can make a movement. We can sort of be the peacock of podcasts.
Aren't we already?
We already are.
Yeah.
And on that note.
Yeah. On that, and that's the note. And that's kind of the final note.
The note is no notes. I think one note would be we'd love to. We didn't even tell Ashley we were recording today, by the way. Sarah,
we thought that we told her. We thought that the other told her, and neither of us remembered to
but
do that.
So. I think we did. I know we did the right thing because Ashley did just. She was at a wedding, as you said, her own.
She was the star.
Yes, she was starring in a wedding. Where also she did look crazy incredible. Did you see those those pictures? I took screenshots of her Instagram and sent them to her like a mother. It was like, what's happening? So we didn't even ask her because we just wanted her to stay in wedding bliss. And we thought we would just do a breakdown of Olympics as a way, as a catalyst to kind of get going again. So we can't wait to have Ashley back. Welcome back, Ashley Wagner. I'll save that audio. Let's use it in the next episode. And Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was an honor and a privilege, as always.
As always. And
bye, everyone.
Until next time. Bye.